Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Survivor Specialist Phil and Alexa are back with our episode 10 predictions and power rankings for Survivor winners at war. And today we are joined by David Sampson from Survivor Cagayan. David, we were in a bad place for a couple weeks where every time we wanted a guest to come on, their winner got voted off the week before. We had James Lim on right after Wendell got voted out. And we kept doing this. And here you are coming on final 10 of Survivor winners at war. And both of your winners are still in the game, Sarah Lucina and Tony Vlachos. Thank you so much for being here. What do you think about what's going on this season?
Well, it's been quite a season. So I've watched it sort of develop. I would say just right off the bat, I want to say Denise's move with Sandra was epic. I loved it. I love what the producers did by bringing in fire tokens. I love watching players decide what they value. The Edge of Extinction, I don't know my entire view of that. I want to see how it unfolds. I want to see what impact Tyson has in the game, but I have him being voted out very soon. but I wonder whether they're going to bring in someone else from Edge of Extinction, which they obviously are. So it'll be another challenge. At what point will they do that? So, and then how will the token sort of be used toward the end? But I really love the fact that they brought back different challenges that have all been done. Really, every challenge is a repeat challenge. I love watching these players play, and I love that my Cagayan vets and alums are representing.
They're representing, and they're running the game right now. That Sophie, Sarah, Tony trio, they are aligned with everybody. They're looking fantastic right now.
I have them going total Sly Fox. Do you know that reference? Let's go all the way. Let's go. So I'm now anyway.
No, I wish I did. I'm sorry, but if you wanted to keep going with the song, we're not here to stop you. You know, if you want to do the whole thing.
Copyright rules are two things. One, you can only sing it for like 10 or 15 seconds, and two, you have to have at least a quarter of an octave. So I would be in violation on both parts.
Yeah, we just got in trouble there. Well, thanks, David. We'll send the check from the lawyers over to you. But okay. So in your wildest dreams, we talked to you right before the finale of season 39 originally, and we had you break down Tony's game. But in your wildest dreams, even if you thought Tony was going to go far and do pretty well, did you ever think he'd be at final 10 with zero votes right now?
Well, absolutely. The way he plays is perfect, right? So he is trying to get everyone to go along with him saying, hey, protect the lions. His whole lion hyena is sort of the metaphor he's been using. And it's interesting, right? If you think about what happens in Africa, you know, in safari and in the desert, hyenas are incredibly interesting, but they're always there after the fact. They're always waiting. But yet if you get to a corpse late, right, you see the hyenas, not the lions. So the real question is, at what point does Tony realize that in order to win this game, he's going to have to switch from lion to hyena? And that's what I think he'll have to do to win.
And I worry a little bit with this lions versus hyenas, because I was saying this on our recap episode on Wednesday. There's some lions who are the hyenas of the lions. You know what I mean? Like, in his metaphor, not everybody is on the level of Tony as being a lion or Jeremy as being a lion. You know, Ben and Sophie, who are being considered lions right now, they're definitely like the seventh and eighth biggest lions out there. So it's going to be interesting to see if they are able to realize that and try to turn on Tony and the big, big, big threats first, or if Tony realizes it first and says, actually, like, you know, let's navigate this however he wants to.
It's so hard when you're on the island. But the fact is that when you look at a game after the fact, you would say, how could you not be voting out Tony right now? What exactly is going through players' minds? Are they not realizing that to get $2 million, people like Tony and Sarah have to be gone? Now, someone's going to win it, obviously, and I have my pick, and I sort of am staying with my picks. But at the end of the day, when you're living through it, it's so super hard to think anything other than get me through today. And that's a big difference with the game now, where it used to be that alliances, you could carry that alliance all the way through and then have the alliance sort of eat itself. Now alliances are changing all the time. So it's actually the secret relationships that can last. And if you look at the edit, Sarah and Tony are never together. I never see them talking. And you know, they've got to be close because of Cagayan. So that's what I'm counting on with my picks.
And that, sorry.
Real no, go quick. Ahead, Alexa.
But that's what's so impressive about Sarah, because to your point, how are people not considering Tony? Sarah was so, so popular as everyone's first attack in the pregame. And now no one's even really talking about her. So that's what's really impressive to me about her, because she won so recently and she's the most recent female winner. Everyone wanted to get rid of her, and now everyone wants to work with her.
Yeah, it's hard to know when you're looking at the edit and you're watching the season unfold. We still have 10 players. So whether or not Sarah can stay under the radar, you know, from an edit standpoint, you know, anything could happen, right? The way you cut the show. But actually on the island, I would find it very difficult to believe that without a run of challenge wins, without some sort of protection, and that's where I think Tony comes in, it's going to be hard for Sarah to make it all the way. Although, spoiler alert, she's my pick.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was your pick when we did this in the preseason. You had Tony in final five and you had Sarah winning it all. Do you think though Sarah's move last week, despite, I mean, she went on social media and she said that it was not gameplay, but do you think this is ultimately going to hurt her? Cause now she's going to be on people's radars, or is it going to be short-term memory?
Yeah, that's short-term memory. When you're actually on the island, you forget about that after 10 seconds, but it's good when it comes out on TV. You get to say, wow, that was gameplay. And then she gets to say, I'm allergic to Chinese food, and it made me smile because I know Sarah. But the fact is, every player, there's 10 players right now playing actively. Everything they do, every step they take, every breath they take, it's all gameplay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So can you clear us up about this whole Chinese food stance? Is she allergic to Chinese food? Is she playing the game? Let's hear it.
So have you ever met anyone who's actually allergic to Chinese food, or are you allergic to an ingredient within Chinese food like MSG, or maybe you're allergic to some sort of pepper? But I've never met anyone. That's like saying I'm allergic to Mexican food. I don't know what that There's 50 things involved in Chinese food. She'd have no way of knowing what the actual reward was. And there would always be a way, because when you sign up for Survivor, you go through the medical checks, you fill out the forms. They know what you're allergic to. They're not going to make a part of the reward, hey, it's an entire Chinese platter of only the special kind of pepper that Sarah Lucina is allergic to.
I was trying to figure out if it was soy sauce or something. Like, that's all I could think in my head, is that there's somehow, I don't even know if you can be allergic to soy sauce, but I was like, maybe she's allergic to that and just knows that that's what it's going to be. But
I think also Chinese food, you know, we're sitting on the couch and we're like, oh my God, Chinese food would be incredible. I assume as a player, Chinese food is a terrible reward because that must just ruin your digestive system.
I just didn't know how close the nearest takeout Chinese restaurant is to Fiji. Or how long that would take to get there. And yeah, when you have not been eating, think about it, right? After you fast, let's say for Yom Kippur, after you fast, you're supposed to eat, you know, slowly, and you eat a bagel and maybe a little fish. You know, having Chinese food after fasting is not ideal to begin with. And you often see the players, and it's real, that they don't feel well after these rewards. And because you feel like you want to eat as much as you can, but your stomach is not used to food, and it's not great. I mean, you hear stories, and they're all true, that after a lot of these rewards, many of the players get sick.
And I was rewatching Africa. I'm still in the midst of rewatching Africa. And Ethan and Lex just went on the Kenya village trip, and they got the French fries. And Ethan had about 10 of them and immediately just beeline straight for the bathroom because his body was just not ready for it at all. And, you know, it's not to the extreme anymore because so many of these rewards are food based nowadays rather than, you know, it's not so much about luxury or anything like that. But still, I mean, if you go 2 days without eating like normal and then all of a sudden you just dump Chinese food on top, not going to be my first choice. That's for sure.
By the way, can we go back to one thing about Sarah and Chinese food? You understand that the main food that you eat for 39 days is rice.
Mm-hmm.
The main food in Chinese food is rice. So I know that she's not allergic to rice. So I guess when you do get Chinese food, there's a side of rice. So I would think that as part of a reward, you may want that as just a starter. But
yeah. There you go. Well, I want to talk to you about something here before we get into the power rankings. Back when we did do the Winners at War Tony retrospective, I brought up the fact you had talked about in your Want to Work in Sports podcast, you had said about having a resume and not stapling your resume. And then I had said to you, well, I think in Survivor, you want to staple your resume. That's like what everybody gets. But then we see Adam Klein last week, who was trying to get a 10-page resume, and he ends up kind of overplaying. Who do you think has the staple in there right now, and who do you think is kind of playing this the way you're supposed to and building just enough?
Well, I love that you asked that, right? Because the staple resume does, for me, apply to Survivor. It applies to all employment. There's no one who needs a staple. You simply don't. One-page resume is fine. And in Survivor, it's not the bulk that you're looking for. It's actually the move. So someone like Denise, her move may have been too much and it may have been too stapley, because the move she made with Sandra, it made people look at her so differently that it wasn't subtle. And in Survivor, what you're looking to do is build your resume in a far more subtle way So when the final tribal comes and you're deciding who to vote for, you're thinking about the overall game. And things pop up and you think back. It's not necessarily the speeches that are given at the final tribal, but the individual jury members think, wow, I can think of 10 or 12 things that went on. This person deserves the win. And that's more what the vote is like than what you think. Who actually really did outplay me? I think that that is the biggest component of outlast, outwit, outplay. Outplay is what the jury members think about. When I think about specific players, I love Sarah and Tony's game and what they're doing. And the person who I have being voted out next is Nick, because mm-hmm. he's sort of a staple guy for me. He's tried to play so many different sides, at least from the edit and what we're seeing, that I don't think anyone would go to bat for him when it came down to it. And in Survivor, you need people to go to bat for you.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm Nick very low on my power rankings as well. And I wonder if this is more of like a new school thinking. And I know Sarah won season 34, but she also played on season 28, which ultimately is going to end up in the middle school tier, I think, of Survivor. And it was a different game. I feel like if you're like a winner from the 30s, it seems to be them who are overplaying a little bit, you know, Adam and Nick and Wendell to an extent. And, you know, it seems to be that's the case because they're so used to having to do, like, they're so used to so many twists, so many advantages, whereas some of these other players, even Tony, he only had two types of advantages on his first season, which is so different than right now where Michelle was just handed a coin to flip.
So if you think about what Adam did at last tribal, that was sort of the end of him, and it's pretty common throughout Survivor, whether it's old, mid, or new school, is people who make that biggest stink at tribal council. And you don't know how much of that is edited. It could have been a three-hour tribal council if you saw 10 minutes of it. But the fact is that Adam just got so much attention put on him. When you look at Sarah's most memorable tribal councils, it's always sort of social issue related. She's not the one scurrying around and making crazy accusations. She stays calm. That's one of the things I love about her gameplay, is that when it matters, because so many decisions these days are made at tribal council, she just has this aura of gravitas that Adam did not show, and that's why he got voted out.
But you
the,
go ahead, gonna, Alexa.
Just in those kind of tribal councils, where especially these live ones, the best move is to be the one where everyone comes to you. Don't start the whispering and don't do the yelling like what Adam and Ben did, because I mean, that's what Adam was going home, but I think that was really the nail in the coffin, that he wasn't able to have any of those conversations. And Sarah and Tony, I can't even remember anything they did at that tribal council, because they were just floating around in there, which is exactly where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, when you talk to Survivor players and you've sort of been on the island, stability is something that is not often found, but it's craved. So people who can show the most stability, to me, have the biggest advantage. Now, Tony, you'd say, that guy's not stable, building spy shacks and all the crazy stuff he does. But don't fool yourself. He's incredibly stable on the island 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's what's given him such a big advantage.
And I think this is I think we lost Phil for a second there. I think he might be frozen. But I actually have Tony as the safest person this week. I have Tony at number one in my power rankings. I think he looks, hey, Phil, you're back. I think Tony's perfectly fine. He's done such a good job of making this group of lions, and they aren't even really considering him being in there other than just another person to bounce ideas off of. They're not seeing him as the lion of the lions. And then he has this thing going with Sarah and Sophie too. So Tony without advantages, dare I say it, might be the safest Tony I've ever seen. I think he looks fantastic right now.
Dare you say it. So I made a list. I didn't know if you wanted to go over this, but I have my top 10 and who I think will actually be voted out, and then who I have winning the game, final tribal, the whole package. So
I love it.
Anyone who's not number 10, number 10 is Nick. I've got everyone else quite safe. But number 9 for me is Tyson. I think that Tyson and Nick, for me, are my two players who are next to go, which is why they're 10 and 9. And I think that there is more to Edge of Extinction than you think. When you're a player and you've been voted out of the game and you go to Edge, the players who remain, even if you're close to them or good friends with them outside the game, or they were in your alliance inside the game, there's something about coming back from the Edge that, in my mind, in this season, will not be an advantage. So I don't think anyone from the Edge has an edge in terms of making it far in the game.
I absolutely agree. And this is, I think, because you're playing with winners, they just don't respect it as much. And right now, even though Tyson is being considered a lion, he's not one of the lion. He's a lion if he doesn't get voted off. But because he's been voted off, I think he's one of the hyenas, and he's even playing that way. He's trying to pick up the scraps here. It's like, if I cause enough confusion, they forget I'm here. And it seems like that's really, really what he wants to be doing. I will say, I have the same final, or I have the same bottom two as you, David. I just have it flipped because I actually worry for Tyson this week. Right now, the only hyenas that are left, at least from who has been called a hyena by Tony, by Jeremy and Sarah, but not really in the same words, are Michelle and Nick. And I think it's dangerous at final 10 for an alliance of eight to just go after two. And so if the lions start going after each other, I could see Tyson being who they go after because they know he's got friends over on Edge of Extinction and they know he can go on a huge immunity run late in the game. So I could see him definitely going home. And that's why I have him in spot 10, actually, instead of Nick, who I have in spot 9.
Yeah, I think for me, it's 50-50. I think Tyson, if I'm on that island right now, I don't want any part of Tyson. I don't think that, you know, Nick, I don't think can win the game. So at the same time, I would say that he is someone you could bring, but and he wouldn't get the votes to win. But it's still too early for that, which is why you might as well just be done with Nick and Tyson and then worry about which players you're going to bring into the final 5, 4, and 3.
Yeah. And who do you have? Who's your number one, though? Like, if you're going to look at who's your safest this week, and maybe this isn't necessarily your winner, but who do you have at, like, the top of your rankings as your safest person going into this week?
Well, if I'm going to be consistent, I have Sarah winning the game, then Sarah's safe every day, every week, and always safe. Will live safely because I have her winning the $2 million. So Sarah, to me, is my safety. I'll give you my final right now. So I think they're all safe. I have Sarah, Michelle, and Sophie, an all-girl final tribal council. And I have Tony in fourth place as I think about what's going to happen. And it's either Tony or Sarah, right? So I think Tony and Sarah, one of those two wins. I'm loving on Sarah right now because of Chinese food. Next week, I may be loving on Tony because of something else. So that's my current top four.
Yeah, I love that too. And Tony makes total sense to be a fourth place finisher because if it comes down to the fire making challenge, maybe it's him versus Sam. Imagine that. How would your heart be if Sarah versus Tony in the fire making challenge to go to final three?
So the strategy of that is interesting. And the reason I don't know that that will happen, we have to see how a few more weeks sort of reveal themselves. When you choose someone that strong to go to fire with, that's a win or lose proposition where the view is if you win the fire challenge, you are going to win the entire game. So it depends who else is there and who wins the last immunity. But it would be very interesting because if it were a Sarah Tony make fire, if they're even doing that, and we don't know that for sure yet, but if they do fire and it is Sarah Tony, I mean, given who I think is going to win, I would say the winner of that wins the game, depending, of course, on who else is in the final. But that would be fascinating to watch. And I know I've spoken with Sarah and Tony, obviously, before 40, just as part of 28. And it's been funny talking to them about fires and making fires. And they have a far different life than I do in terms of that.
Well, I do want to say, too, because I know my internet, I'm sitting right by the router, but I'm not in my normal spot. So if I cut out, it was funny. You were talking about stability before, David, and I get a message in the top corner that says unstable internet connection. So if that comes up, I have my phone here that I can switch to if it gets bad enough. So just keep me posted. I can hear everything you guys are saying, though. But yeah, I actually like your final three there. My one and two for this week, I have Sophie at one and Sarah at two. And I think this is kind of like, even though we've seen Tony and Sarah talk to each other a little bit, and we had that really fun scene at night with Cops R Us, and they're getting together, I'm going to put the face paint on you and all that.
Ash Wednesday.
Sophie and Sarah, to me, feels like kind of the alliance that's been running things. Because it seems like every time Sophie says, don't worry or worry, you should not worry or worry. Like, Sophie knows everything that's going on, and then her and Sarah getting on that small tribe with Adam and Ben really had to work together, and I think they really built a great bond. Sophie with the idol is the only reason I put her ahead of Sarah, but Sarah's got the steal a vote, so I mean, she's in a phenomenal spot too.
Yeah, I have Sophie more as a messenger than a leader, and obviously it'd be interesting after the finale airs to learn exactly how it goes down with Sophie, Sarah, Tony, all of them. But to me, Sophie always looks like she does have the information, but I wonder whether she is being told what's going on and then acts and looks as though she is running things, but it's really, she's being puppeted a little bit. Wait to see.
Yeah. And who do you think would be puppeting her if there was somebody who is like telling her, Sophie, vote this way?
I mean, I've had Sarah's hand up my shirt so many times in real world that she's really good at that. She's really good at getting people to do what she wants them to do and make it feel like it's their idea. And I love that. That's part. That's one of my biggest business principles in running a business in the real world, is get people who work for you to do what you want them to do, but make them think it's their idea. And Sarah's really good at that.
I just imagine the conversation before the seven marathon, seven continents, 7 days was, hey, David, you want to go to the bar and grab a beer? And the next thing you know, you're on a plane flying to Antarctica to run 26.2 miles, you know?
Sarah and I were at a winery in South Africa before we started. The day before we flew to Antarctica, our whole team went to a winery, and we had several bottles of wine the day before doing seven marathons in 7 days.
Oh, my God. The carbo loading of champions.
That sounds just like pure punishment. But Alexa, who's your number two? Who you got at two?
Someone we haven't really brought up yet. I am feeling really confident about Jeremy, easily because his safety without power expires this week. And more recently, I feel like when someone has an advantage that's about to expire, they get fancy with it. We saw Kelly Kim do that last season. We saw Sandra do that this season. Really clearly didn't work out for either of them. But Jeremy has that very, very cool way of looking at the game. I think he does have a very good perception of where he is, especially because two episodes ago, he wanted Wendell. No one else wanted to work with Wendell. He was willing to walk away from that. But I think he saw that and said, okay, I don't have the bargaining power that I thought I did because I still had to give up what I actually wanted to vote with the group. So I don't think his name will really come up anyway, but I think just on top of that, him being able to completely walk out of tribal council and just cause a total disaster, I think that puts him in a really good spot. So I have Jeremy at number two, right behind Tony. I think he's looking really safe, and he's another lion that no one's really talking about.
He's a malleable fellow, isn't he? He has the ability to sort of, I don't know that I view him as much as a lion. He's sort of like an eel a little bit, that he gets in and around and out. And sometimes he disappears and then comes up and then goes down. And so I love how he plays the game. Obviously, a very accomplished player. I think he's definitely safe. I don't know that he is a candidate to win. I think he's sort of a middle elimination guy here in the top 10. I have him finishing sixth in this game, he's fun to watch.
Amazing. And it seems like his name's coming up this week, which makes me even more confident that he would play the safety without power and just throw a wrench in everybody's plans. Because, you know, it seems in the preview we saw, let's vote out Jeremy. If you're going to try to make a move on Jeremy, Jeremy sits on a bench and everybody comes to him. Somebody's going to come to him and say, Jeremy, you're in trouble tonight. And he's going to say, Jeff, I'm out of here. See you later. And then try to regroup next week, you know, at final nine and work your way back up from that. You see it all the time in Survivor. If you can survive one vote, who knows what can happen the next time? I mean, so much changes. And I think that's why for Michelle and Nick, even though I'm a little lower on Nick, with Adam going home last week, that might be the end of that storyline of get rid of the goats, the hyenas, and they might get a second life here because Adam went home first and he was kind of the sacrifice.
You know, what you're mentioning is a critical point that we touched on earlier in the show, which is in the old days where there were really good alliances, if you could survive another day, it just meant that you weren't the first of your alliance and you'd be gone the next week or the week after that. And what's the difference if you're going to finish 10th or 8th or 5th in the game? My view, being voted out first, either I'm going to win the game, and if I finish in second, I still lost, right? My season, there were 17 losers and Tony. So those were the old days. In the new days, if you can survive the way Jeremy can with his basically disappearance advantage, you do it because there are no true, true blue alliances. And you saw with Jeremy himself, he walks away from Wendell so fast your head would spin.
Yeah, he didn't care. And I have Jeremy at three, so also think he's pretty safe. David, who's your number two? So I know you had said Sophie and Michelle. Is that who you got at two and three?
I have, yes. I have Sarah, Michelle, Sophie, Tony in four, and then number five is Ben. There's something about Ben that just fascinates me as a player and his ability to survive what happened at Tribal with Adam. This is a big week for him. I was thinking about Ben being number 10 because of what happened at Tribal last week. And when I decided against it, I moved him all the way up to five because to me, that's either a he's done or everything's fine. And I think we'll know early on in this next episode how people reacted to that Tribal.
Yeah, because I'm almost wondering, was he putting on a little bit of a show to make sure Adam couldn't get around and talk to anybody while everybody was able to just say, what if Adam has an idol? Who's our backup plan? What do we do here? Like, was he putting on a show or was this real?
It's impossible to know, right? Because the way it's cut together, was all that within a 10-minute time period or not? It could have been over a longer period of time. And is it possible that he could distract Adam? Adam's a pretty sophisticated player. He would see that everyone's talking around him. Why would he waste his time yelling at Ben when everybody's whispering around him and then they go right to a vote? Because you know when you have a live tribal council, Jeff can stop at any time and say, all right, it's time to vote. So you don't want to waste time yelling at Ben if you know that you've got to scurry around and figure out different votes.
Exactly.
And that's what I have loved so much about their relationship, because that's such a good point about Adam and a good point about Ben, because they very well could have said, all right, Ben's causing a whole thing. Why don't we get rid of him? Being the one fighting is such a bad spot. But their disdain for each other was so real. And so, I mean, we can debate Sarah being gameplay versus goodness of her heart all we want. Ben and Adam just do not like each other. And that is not strategic. That felt very personal. That was an older brother and a younger brother who've been beating each other up for 12 years. So I think the fact that Adam, who had his eye on that podium the entire time, couldn't let go of fighting Ben and Ben couldn't let go of fighting Adam, I think that just speaks to how much they couldn't stand each other. I don't envision this being a huge problem for Ben, because it's sort of, the way I see it is that there's this kind of hive mind mentality of I'm on team Ben because no one else is on team Adam. So what he did is kind of fine, but we'll see. I have been pretty low. I'm a little nervous for him, but I guess we'll get to him later. Just to catch up to you guys, because we've kind of talked about them a bunch. I have Sophie at number three and I have Sarah at number four. I know both their names briefly came up in that preview, but the two of them have a lot of power and it's very, very different power. Like you mentioned earlier, David, Sophie, she's very perceptive and we're trying to learn, is she the one actually calling the shots or does it appear that way? Sarah's a lot more out there. What she said to us in her confessional about taking down Adam, Sarah's pretty public about it. So I think the two of them complement each other really, really well. And I think if Sarah's name comes up, Tony will shut that down really quickly. So I'm not too nervous about either of them. I think they're going to keep running this.
You know, if they have a secret alliance, Tony and Sarah, Tony's got to be very careful, right? You say shut it down very quickly and vociferously, but then all of a sudden the alliance becomes not so secretive and not as impactful. So if Sarah's name really is on the block at any point, or Tony's name is ever on the block at any point, it's always interesting to know what goes on the island that is not in the show and how really loud and defensive the players would be towards someone who they're secret with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I too have Ben at number five, David, just as you do. But my number four, I have Kim. Because I think what ultimately is going to happen, and this just makes sense in my head, because I can't wrap my head around the fact that Kim is playing as quiet of a game as she is after we saw, like, and just the edit is very small and everything she's doing seemed wonky at the beginning. So I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. And I'm starting to say to myself, she's kind of turning it around. She's got an idol really close with Sophie, it seems like, probably means she's kind of close with Sarah. So if the three of them could be together, I could see Kim being that fire challenge boot where all of a sudden we kind of forget what happened in the first portion of the game and we start giving her the robbed goddess title. And I could definitely see that happening. And the more we watch, like, her name isn't coming up at all. And I would have thought by this point people would be terrified of Kim because she'd be playing a dominant game. But they don't seem worried about her at all because she's playing a pretty quiet game. So I got her at four. I think she's super safe this week. And I think fourth place is probably good for where she's going to finish in this game, really.
She certainly has a chance, right? So the old school calling people the goat, right? Is it possible that in a winner's season that there could be goats when these are people who have won the game? And I think Kim really is that category for me on this season. I just don't think, forget the staple, I don't think she has anything really going for her in terms of $2 million. Would I carry her to the end? I'm not sure I'd have an issue with that because I just don't think that she would get enough votes to take the money from me. But in terms of immediacy, she's just sort of, there's no reason to get her out. Like the way for me, getting out Nick and Tyson matters way more than getting out someone like Kim. So I would have Kim much safer, but I have her out pretty quickly, like finishing seventh in this game.
Yeah, and I could see that happening too, but I think like you were kind of saying with Jeremy, he feels like a middle boot here. I think Kim, I think her ceiling is fourth place. I think her floor is about eighth place. Like, I think she's a fourth to eighth place. I don't really see her sitting in the final three because I think that we would have seen a little bit more from her earlier. And I think like just with how dominant she was her first time, I think we'd see more of why she's not so dominant, kind of the anti-Michelle where Michelle's talking about how she wants to prove she deserves it. Maybe a little bit of like, maybe Kim didn't deserve this amount of hype. So I think that the best she can do is fourth, but I don't see her being one of the next two boots because there's just so many bigger fish to fry, or just get rid of the two hyenas and don't worry about Kim yet because you can get rid of her. It seems like she does have an idol too. So, you know, not that you can get rid of her at any time, but I do think that she's kind of being seen as, you know, not expendable, but might be an easy vote for people at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it'll be great. I can't wait for these last 10, you know, votes because it's going to be fascinating. And I am just thinking about these players. I've been thinking a lot. I want to shout out to the cast members who were cast for 41 and 42. It is such a big part of your life once you know that you're going to be on the show, as you get prepared, as you figure out wardrobe, as you sort of start envisioning things that are going to be happening, it becomes all encompassing. And there's a finish line. Obviously, we're not Olympic athletes, but it's the equivalent of training for the Olympics. You know there's a date when you will be leaving for Los Angeles and starting the sort of the game, because the 39 days obviously start before 39 days start. So I feel for the cast members of 41 and 42 because, you know, they've delayed production. There's no way of knowing. And it's hard to keep that edge. It's hard to, like, for an athlete who's now training for, like, if you're in MLB or the NBA, how do you keep training when you don't know when your season's going to start again or if it's going to start? Mm-hmm. So I want to shout out to those cast members who are living a dream, and then it turns quickly into a nightmare. Obviously, nothing like the scope of the pandemic and the deaths and the families being impacted, the economy, et cetera. But I just want to shout out to them. If you're watching, which they are, I'm sure, we're thinking about you.
Yeah, and I love what you said there, because for 41 especially, I mean, you know, okay, they were supposed to fly out, what, mid-March, like right around the time that this lockdown hit. And, I mean, thankfully they hadn't flown out yet, because that would have been even more of a disaster. I mean, that would have just been crazy to try to figure out if the game had started. How do you end the game with that? But I completely agree, and I wonder, you know, season 41 and season 42 are going to happen at some point in the future. We don't know when, but they're going to happen. The ratings on season 40 have been phenomenal, part because people are sitting at home right now, but also in part just because it's great TV. And I think that the producers have done a really good job of promoting it. But, you know, is this going to impact the gameplay of some of these players? I mean, could it be that there's recasting possibly for season 41 and 42 because people now don't feel safe going out there and they don't want to be the first ones to get on a plane to go to Fiji right after this pandemic? Like, or even if they just don't fit into that, whatever they were before this thing happened, because people's lives are changing so much right now. So I really feel for 41 and 42. And, you know, I'm curious to see what like the future of Survivor is going to look like after this.
Yeah, they're going to need testing of all crew, of all cast, and they're going to need often testing, right? Until there's a vaccine. If you're going to shoot a show like Survivor before a vaccine, I'm not sure how they do it, because there's no social distancing at all. And unless we find out the antibodies, that if people who have the antibodies, you'd have to have a cast full of everyone with antibodies, but then there'd have to be enough time where the scientific and medical community have said, hey, if you've got the antibodies, you're good to go for X number of months before you're subject to get COVID-19 again or could get it. And there's no way they want to start filming again until they know they can get 39 days in. And if someone would test positive in the middle of the show, that's the end. Mm-hmm. The show would get stopped right then and there, and everyone would go into quarantine. So I don't think there's any filming of Survivor you know, the outside is when there's a vaccine. And that's a very real part of our society right now in terms of sports, Survivor, reality shows like that, going into stadiums or ballparks or arenas, concerts. I think on the outside, you have to be looking at when a vaccine is readily available. And that could be 12 months.
Yeah. And I think too, like everybody knows Survivor's an international show, but I think people forget just because it's being shot in Fiji, you can't just be looking at American dates for this and the Fiji dates. There's people who work on Survivor from all over the world. I mean, you know, numerous, numerous countries. And, you know, just because America and Fiji might say, okay, we can shoot. Well, what about other countries that maybe don't feel like they're ready to? And then you don't want to, and like, you can't just say, oh, well, you're not working like on this show. You've been an EP for however many years, but you no longer are, because of course, like, it's a really, really crazy situation. That's,
well, if you think about what the leagues are looking at, you know, you've read a little bit about NBA and MLB looking at these quarantine bubbles and creating one area where everyone would go shelter in place. There'd be testing available, et cetera. That's exactly what Survivor will have to be when they go and start filming again. It's going to turn into a quarantine bubble for all crew. Everybody will end up on the island, and there'll have to be testing for everyone and testing during the shooting of the show. So I think there is a map, a roadmap to film Survivor again, but we are far from that moment right now.
Yeah, totally, totally agree. All right, so back for season 40, though. So this, Alexa, who's your number five?
My number five is Michelle. I think I have her kind of right in the middle, because I think she's one of these hyenas who can get to the end and absolutely win. But a point that you made earlier, David, about Nick is that no one is really going to stand up for Nick and raise a hand and say, I don't want Nick to go home. I don't know how many people will do that for Michelle, but I also don't think that Michelle is ever going to be in a situation where everyone says, oh my gosh, I absolutely need to get rid of Michelle. I think they're going to gun for Kim before they'll gun for Michelle. I think they'll gun for Denise before they go for Michelle. But where she stands alliance-wise is still a little shaky to me. I just don't really know. So that's why I have her in the middle, because I don't really know who she's aligned with. So that makes me nervous for her. But I also don't think anybody's actively going to try to take her down. So that's why I'm feeling pretty confident for her.
And David, so you, Brent, I have Michelle at number six. David, you mentioned that you love the fire tokens on this season. And like, people are being told, you know, what do you value? They're being given that opportunity. What do you value? What did you think of Michelle spending 4 fire tokens on this coin, especially from the perspective of somebody who's just playing the game and doesn't see all the behind the scenes that a viewer is seeing?
So the value of the coin, if you think about it, it's an 8-token coin, right? Because there's a 50-50 shot that it's worth 0, right? So if you flip it and you lose the flip and it's straight 50-50, then your value is 0. And for her to say that this is a big move and a big play, if I had 4 tokens, I would wait for way more than a 50-50 shot. I want to be in complete control of whatever advantage I'm buying for that many tokens, because I go from having the token lead to having 0, all for a 50-50 shot. The juice is not worth the squeeze to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I mean, it was something that I kind of was talking about. Well, you're giving yourself 50-50 chance, and Michelle's not really going to win an immunity, so it's a better chance of being immune. It's tough because we don't know what they are expecting to be coming from Edge of Extinction in terms of these coins. Like, we don't know what they think they could possibly buy. Like, Sophie knows she can get an idol, and Sarah knows she can get an extra vote or steal a vote. Jeremy knows he can get a safety without power. Michelle might not know at all what she can get from this. And I'm not trying to say that, like, this is the thing, like, oh yeah, you should spend 4 fire tokens on this. But if you think maybe this is like the extent of what you're going to get, it's tough because it's the first season we're seeing this. I think if season 41 has a very similar thing, which I don't think there's going to be Edge of Extinction, but if season 41 has a very similar thing where it's 4 fire tokens for a flip a coin, I don't think the person buys it because they've seen what else you can get with these fire tokens.
So it reminded me of the old Survivor auctions, mm-hmm. where some people would spend all their money early because their view was, hey, let me get the pizza now, because I have no way of knowing what else my cash could be used for. And he could end the auction at any moment. But in the case of fire tokens, he already said Jeff did, that the Fire tokens will be a part of the game for the whole game. So there was no reason for Michelle to say, oh, this is my last chance to lever my 4 Fire tokens. That's why I would have waited. Whereas in the Survivor auction, and that may have been her mentality, unfortunately, but in the Survivor auction, there's a real end to it, and it can come at any second, which increases your view when you're calculating how to spend your dollars. It changes the inflection point of when you're going to spend more on something because of the timing of it.
Yeah. And so speaking of your projected final three, you're thinking Sophie, Sarah, Michelle. If Michelle does play this coin correctly, let's say she's going to go home, she flips this coin, now she's safe. Do you think, though, sitting in a final three, that the jury is going to give her credit for that? Or are they just going to be like, you got lucky and flipped a coin?
To me, she'd be a no vote final three if she's in it. And I have her in it because I have an all girl final three just to see. But I would have her getting no votes, actually.
Okay. Okay. And so what do you make of the confessional she's getting constantly referencing her Aubrey victory? Or do you think that we're just getting that all the time so that it's kind of like now she's in the Aubrey position when she ends up losing?
Hmm.
You know, it's funny, and I'm not being cynical, but you know very well, everyone knows this now after 40 seasons, confessionals, you see 2 minutes of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's much more that goes on in the confessionals. It's impossible to know exactly where Michelle is. I couldn't agree with you guys more. I don't exactly know where she is in the game, but I just have this feeling, knowing her and watching her play, that she sort of stays safe as a better Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Right, as someone who people would rather keep around because they're fun to live with and you're close to them because you're hanging out 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 39 days. If I have my choice to be with someone who I like being around and I don't view them as a threat, I'm not going to vote them out, because forget the gameplay part of it, even though you're always playing. Once you cross that bridge that, hey, I'm not threatened by Michelle, but God, I really like her. She's someone I would keep.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think like, you know, I had Michelle as my winner pick before the season began, and I'm like a huge Michelle stan defender here. But I do think that she's got the way this is shaping up, she'd have to sit next to like 2 Edge of Extinction returnees, or Nick and an Edge of Extinction returnee, or something along those lines. Like Parvati seems like somebody who really likes Michelle and might vote for Michelle no matter what. But you have Sarah, you have Tony, you have Denise, who made that move on Sandra, you have Kim, who, you know, is probably gonna have to play an idol at some point this post merge Jeremy. There's too many huge names that pretty much no matter what Michelle does her entire game, if she sits next to them, based on where they're at right now, she's not going to win. She needs to have the right combination.
I'll end with this, a thought, just to give you perspective where I am on old school, middle school, and new school. Picture the jury at the end. It's every contestant except Sandra. It's every winner. So you've got old school, mid school, and new school. Do you think for a minute that old school players will vote for anyone in the new school, or that new school players will vote for anyone in the old school? To me, if you're in the middle school, you have the ability to get votes from both sides, which is why I have a middle school player like Sarah winning the whole game.
I think that's a really great point. I didn't even think about that, because, I mean, you see the old school t-shirts that are coming out now. That's a great point. Ethan, does Ethan want to vote for, you know, Michelle or Nick or Ben? Probably not.
And you look at how that went during that first Edge of Extinction challenge. Rob mentioned it. Adam mentioned it under his breath. Every single person said, like, oh, my gosh, all the old schoolers are over there and all the new schoolers are here, except for poor Natalie and Tyson, because they're now on total opposite sides of that. But I mean, if I'm Parvati, Ethan, or Rob, and am I going to vote for a new school player to win? I don't think so, because they're all sitting there and they're all feeding each other. And I'm sure you guys probably saw the secret scene. Parvati is sharing that peanut butter with only the first 6 people who were voted out. So that's, I think, past, I don't even know if Yule's getting it. I'm not sure, but Only those early players are getting that peanut butter. So that mentality, that's going to stick there. And that's the whole Edge of Extinction mentality too. It's kind of a hive mind. So I think that brings up a really good point that a middle schooler is probably going to win this.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really cool too. Like, if you think about how the old school players have kind of treated the new school players, despite the fact that the old school have been eliminated, they're almost looking at the new school players like, oh, you're so cute. Good for you. Like, you're trying your best. Like, Adam getting, like, that nice reception. I think that most of that was authentic. But I also think they're like, wow, look at this kid go. Like, go get him, buddy. And I feel like it's the same thing with Nick. Nick's getting really frustrated. And I think Wendell kind of experienced that a little bit. Because even though all the old schoolers got voted out, they still feel like they're the kings of Survivor, even though they they're losing right now. They still feel like they're the kings, and they're like better than you to a lot of these new schoolers.
It's a great point, and we'll see how it all unfolds, but I think there's a lot to it. When Adam walks up to into the edge of extinction, I can only imagine, right, him sleeping by himself at the shelter, and when they're all helping each other and doing the next challenge to get a token or to get something to trade into the game. I just think that they look at Adam and like, hey, all right, Adam, I'm glad you're here, but no peanut butter for you.
Yeah, you can go hang out with Wendell now. Like, I feel like that's how it's going to be. Wendell and Adam are going to be kind of outsiders over there. So who, Alexa, who's your number six?
I actually, my six and seven are both middle schoolers, so I guess I'm about to eat my words here. The two people who I know to be pretty closely aligned, I have Kim at number six and Denise at number seven. I am nervous for Kim. She has an idol. She's won immunities. I think, but the thing is, other than at the very, very first tribal council, in between her two seasons, Kim has really not been in trouble that much. So I think she got her first real scare at that first tribal council, but she held on to an idol for a really, really long time in One World. She's holding on to this idol for a really, really long time. I'm not sure if when her name inevitably comes up, if she's going to catch that as, okay, now I need to play it, because she was never really in that position in One World. So I am nervous for her, but at the same time, I think she has known that she hasn't had her footing for a really long time. So I think she is hyper aware of her position. But I think when it comes to her and then Denise, they're really kind of only tight with each other. I think we're seeing some of Kim and Tyson together, but I don't know how much clout Tyson has considering the position that he's in. So I think Kim is a name where she's loosely aligned with a number of people, but I just don't know who's going to defend her, because at the end of the day, we have Tony, who's the King Lion. Kim walking into this was right behind Sandra. I think Sandra and Parvati, the biggest female name that people were terrified of, because she had such a dominant win and has only played once. So I'm just nervous for her. I'm also nervous for Denise, because just because of that reaction they had to how she got rid of Sandra, I think there's a lot of respect there, but Denise has won an immunity. Denise took down the queen. Denise went to every single tribal council and she won. Denise is building a resume, and the difference between her and everyone else is Denise's was very public, because she had to talk about how she got rid of Sandra. So a little nervous for the two of them, but I don't think they're absolutely on the chopping block.
Yeah, and you haven't spoken about Denise yet, David. What is your take? I mean, only really about how epic that move was, but what's your take on the rest of her game and her chances in this season?
I think the staple is permanent now for me, right? So getting back to the resume metaphor, I think that what she did just does put a big target on her back. She needs immunity. She's also a threat in challenges, especially they're all individual immunity challenges now, and she's strong. And anytime they would have a split of where you have one woman and one man getting immunity, the advantage would always go to Denise. So I would have her voted out as quickly as possible. I have her voted out after Nick and Tyson sort of finishing in eighth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have Denise in eighth too. And you know, when we do these power rankings, we kind of take them week by week, but then there's other players who I'm like, this is really like the place they're gonna finish. And when I look at my 10, 9, 8, I go Tyson, Nick, Denise. I could see those being the next three people voted off in that order, because Denise, everybody respects it so much, but then you still have to fear it now. Like, you can't just sit there and be like, wow, like, she surprised me. Cause if you're still like starry eyed at how she surprised you, then you're playing the wrong game here, especially in an all winter season. Like, now you have to take her very, very seriously. And I thought it was interesting when Jeremy had that confessional, how Tony's like, good, Denise made herself a threat. And Jeremy's like, Tony thinks that Denise is a threat. Tony's still a bigger threat than Denise. I don't know about that on this season. I have Tony at number seven. I got Denise at number eight. And I think Denise is a bigger threat than Tony right now, because Tony has just played so under the radar. It's unbelievable. And David, I said this on our Wednesday night podcast. Tony not doing anything is a storyline. And when do you ever see that on Survivor, where when a player is not doing anything, they're being praised for how well they're really not doing anything? And Tony is doing that so well. So I think Denise is in trouble.
You know, Tony set this up in my mind, and he's brilliant for doing it. He didn't even know there'd be a winter season, but he knows exactly why I got voted out so quickly the second time he played. And he was aware that he had to just be different, and he had to have a different approach. But he's still the same sort of lion-like player, which is why I think he's going so far in the game. But I'm not sure how quiet his leadership is actually on that island.
Yeah, that's true too. Now, let me ask you this, because we didn't really talk about if Tony and Sarah were actually sitting the final together. But, you know, most people, and I don't know if you're in agreement with this, if Tony were to sit at the final three on this season against anybody in the game, do you think he pulls it out really against anybody?
You're not going to catch me choosing between Tony and Sarah, because if so, I'm going to have to go with Sarah just because of our travels together. And I love her, and I love them both, obviously, so much. So they're too smart. I guess I would say it this way. I would be so disappointed if Tony and Sarah end up sitting in the final tribal together, because they're each too smart to know that if you go against each other, like in politics, that you could end up actually having the third person win, because Tony and Sarah could actually split the vote, and you don't want to split vote in an election or in a final tribal council.
Yeah. And I actually, the reason I was kind of leading with this is because I believe that Tony beats everybody, but Sarah has the best argument to beat Tony, because she played with him. She lost to him once. She rebounded and beat him. And now she could make such a compelling argument about how her growth and all of that, and to get to the end. But I completely agree with you. I don't think the two of them are going to end up sitting next to each other, because I think they both know ultimately cops are us. One's blindsiding the other at some point in this. Like, it's just going to have to happen. They really don't have a choice.
So I don't know that I agree in that. I don't think that they will ever turn on each other. I know them from 28. I just don't think they will. I think they would actually talk about it. It'll be great to see if they show it on the air, because I think they would actually say, listen, it can't be both of us, because we're going to screw one of us, right? So do they split the money? Do they each take $1 million and say, hey, you go and win, but it could have been me? I mean, there's a lot of interesting deals that can be made at $2 million versus $1
million. That's true. And don't tell CBS about it, because they will get very angry if they start hearing that. You got, what is it, Sash from 21? Isn't that the rumor that he was trying to make that deal? But let's just hope that that's not happening, at least not on screen, because I don't think they would show that.
Yeah, my point is that I don't think that happens, which is why I think they have to show Sarah and Tony having the talk, because I don't think they're going to blindside each other.
Yeah. Alexa, who's your – so we've done our top 10. Who you got 7, 8, and 9?
Yeah, I'll finish mine up real quick. My 8, 9, 10, I go Ben 8, Tyson 9, and David, I agree with you that Nick is going home at number 10.
So we all have Nick and Tyson at the bottom, two very, very different players, obviously. One seen as the hyena, one seen as a lion, one's coming back from Edge of Extinction, the other's just trying to get his footing in the game. Why are we all thinking maybe like Tyson? If it's not going to be Nick, it's Tyson, or, you know, vice versa. Why are we thinking Tyson necessarily? Like, and I kind of gave my reasoning earlier, but like, what is it about Tyson that just screams like, if they can't get Nick, it's got to be him this week?
Yeah, I gave my reason earlier. I think it's because I think the way the players look at the Edge of Extinction returnees, right? I think that they're not going to be in a position where they want them to go far. Tyson, in fact, is a challenge threat. And so if I were playing that game and someone came back off the edge, I'd want to get him right back there as quickly as possible. So that would be my reasoning for Tyson. Mm-hmm.
And so we're going – so this week obviously is from the preview. This is the infamous – what's going to become the infamous 945-person loved one visit, where everybody's like entire family is coming out there. We have kids coming out. We have, you know, like it's everybody's coming out. I mean, Tyson's hugging his kids. I think Michelle's hugging a child. Like, there's children there. There's adults there. There's more than one loved one. Do you think that has the potential to actually hurt somebody because like of who comes out for them or who they see? Like, do you think that the family visit will have any type of impact on this season at all?
I spent a lot of time talking to people and thinking about family visits and the pros and cons of that. And the way you're really putting out your family, not just by going on the show to start with, but then by having them schlep to Fiji, right? It's not an easy trip by any stretch. And now the pressure of bringing kids and having them on a flight for all those hours, and then for the possibility that you don't get to spend actual time with them, I think that they're going to have to adjust in a certain way and make sure there's a little time. Because how do you explain to a child that they're coming out to see their parent and they get 2 minutes and that's it after traveling for 20 hours? I'm just not sure that how that will work. I don't know that I'm interested to watch, let's say.
It might almost be what they did in Gabon, where Bob won and was able to have the time with his loved one. And then he came back to camp and he said, "You guys want to see something really cool?" And he whistled and all the other loved ones came. I could see them doing something like that, where like somebody gets an extended time with their loved one. But I totally agree with you. I mean, even having Dan Spilo's son come out there last season is kind of like a risky move, because if they didn't choose Dan, his son was just leaving. And we've seen it, you know, Shane Powers had Boston come out and Boston ended up, you know, getting to spend time with him. So we've never actually seen a child not get to spend the time with their loved one once they're out there. But on this season, it feels like it's going to be impossible for one of them to not get picked, because there's so many out there with their children.
Yeah, I think you'll see an adjustment. I think you have to. It's practical and it makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm curious to see how it's going to go, because they've been talking about this family visit for a long time. And Tyson's taking all the credit, saying that he's the one who made this happen. And, you know, that it was, you know, "I want my kids there." His interview with ET Canada was absurd and so funny at the beginning of the season. But do we have any other things that we want to say about the cast? I mean, Alex, I know we got to do the eliminator game real quick, but do we have anything else that we want to add in here that we didn't touch on, David?
I'm good. This has been great. I think it's exciting. It's been a great season so far, and now we're getting down to it.
All right, Alexa, let's explain the eliminator game to him, who I know he definitely follows closely how like the football survivor pools work. So he's probably going to be frustrated that he's left with like two people by these other survivors.
Well, Phil, I don't have the list in front of me, but I'm going to pick Jeremy. Yeah.
Okay. So I have it in front of me. So David, the way we do this is we take, it's like a survivor football pool where you can only pick each team once. And then if your team loses, you're out. Right. So in this, it's, you have to pick somebody who's not going to go home. But the added difficulty of this is that as you're picking people who aren't going home, they're also being voted out of the game. So the team survivor, what's been happening this entire season is they've been picking the people who are like their number one in their power rankings. So like, you're really not left with many options this week as to who you can pick. But you want to pick somebody who's not going home, and I'm going to give you your options. I think you have three. Okay. So just so you're aware. But so you can't pick Nick. You can't pick Kim. You can't pick Sophie. Can't pick Michelle. Can't pick Jeremy. Can't pick Sarah. Can't pick Denise. So you're left with Tony, Ben, and Tyson. Those are the three people that you could pick from.
So if I choose Tony, I get to ride him all the way.
So we do it as like a week by week thing. But if you pick Tony, you could ride Tony all the way too. You could say that this is your winner pick, because a lot of people were picking like their number ones.
So if you're not letting me pick Sarah, then I'm going Tony, of course. I've been nothing but consistent throughout.
Mm-hmm. Hey, nobody is ever going to fault you that, because I mean, that's what you've been saying. I mean, since we got you on here the first time, it was Tony and Sarah. Do not be surprised. Do not be surprised. And I underestimated the crap out of Tony coming into the season. When I originally did my thing before they even flew out and we just knew who was going out there before the game even started, I said Michelle, Adam, Tony, final three. But I had Tony getting zero votes in that final three, because I figured he was just going to rub people the wrong way or get back from Edge of Extinction or something like that. He's going to be in the final. There's a good chance he's going to be in the final three. And I was completely wrong on how he played this game. He's played it unbelievably.
Once you have a family on Survivor, the way I do with Survivor 28, whether you're first boot or the winner like Tony was, there's no way you don't stand by those people forever. So I was standing by Sarah and Tony from minute one till the final torch extinction. What's the word? Snuff. That's
snuff.
What I'm looking for. Till the final snuff.
I like that extinction sewing your head. Edge of Extinction has just embedded it into our brains. But Alexa, you want to take us home here?
Yeah, David, thanks so much for coming on. We've loved having you. Always have some good insight. I'm so glad that Tony and Sarah are still here so we could chat about both of them instead of both of them sitting on Edge of Extinction. Everyone will be back right after the East Coast episode this Wednesday. Everyone have a happy Easter for those who celebrate, and stay safe, stay inside, wash your hands.